talk some Pac-12 football. Who better than the one who gets a very up close and personal look at the games as an ace sideline reporter was in town last week for Nevada, back in her old stomping ground once again with the terrific trio of Roxy Bernstein and Anthony Herron. And our guest, you can follow her on Twitter using the handle at Jill_Savage. Jill, always a pleasure to chat. How is life treating you these days?
So far, so good, Ken. And I'm excited about another Pac-12 schedule that we have in front of us. So, yeah, life is good. No complaints.
I saw on your Twitter account last week at Autzen that you never miss a beat. You got a shot with a couple of people who are pretty good at what they do, Sabrina Ionescu and her Final Four coach, Kelly Graves. Obviously, around here, they are super-duper stars. And you travel the conference. You do a lot of other things. What they're accomplishing, are they? How well-known are they outside of, you know, our Eugene bubble?
Well, I would say that was one of the things when I saw I had back-to-back Oregon games. I said, okay, I want women's basketball on this first game because Sabrina Ionescu is a complete superstar. Like, she doesn't need a pass to walk on the field, which is basically unheard of at the University of Oregon. They just let Sabrina go do really whatever she wants to do. So, yeah, it was very exciting to have both of them, her and Kelly Graves, down there on the field. But I know so many people have come up to me and said that they are now, like, Oregon women's basketball fans because they love the style that they play. Obviously, Sabrina is a superstar, but they have such an enjoyable product to watch on the court. Like, they play good fundamental basketball, and it's so exciting to see. Yeah, I know that, you know, people across the country, I have a lot of fans from back home that I have made from Iowa, like my relatives. They are all now 100% in on Oregon women's basketball, and it's more of a trend than I've ever seen before. Like, women's basketball is definitely having a moment right now. And Oregon is one of the leaders of that bus.
No, I always say I've been watching these games, I hate to say it, you know, now about a half century. And Jill, I've honestly never come across a team who plays, would I be accurate to say, they bring joy. They play the game with joy. There's a passion and a love that I don't think you take for granted even great players and teams always have.
Absolutely. And that's what Kelly Graham says all the time. He's like, why am I good as a coach? I have great players that enjoy playing the game. And Kelly's over there on the bench. Like, he has such a relaxed style about him, right? Like, sitting back, his arms are over the chairs next to him. Like, it's an enjoyable experience every time you go see them. And they understand, like, the community engagement part. And Kelly, you know, he even said on the interview when I was chatting with him, he's like, I got stopped probably like 20 times on my way down here to see you, the fans are super excited about the season that we have coming up, and it's just a total, like, big hug around this team. I feel like everybody feels like they know them, and they've been around for so many years now.
Now, she and he, they're also class acts. Before we get to football, obviously it's a very somber day, and you're like half my age, but I'm always curious, historical, the impact 18 years ago today as we woke to the horror. Where was Jill Savage? High school? I'm just curious as to you being in the Midwest, what you remember about September 1st, 2001.
So I was a junior in high school. I didn't have a first period class. Worked that out to my advantage there, junior year. So I got to go in a little bit later. And I would always wake up and put the Today Show on and eat my breakfast. And so I was actually sitting there watching everything unfold in front of me. And it was just the most surreal moment. And then to drive in to go to school and to just be with other people talking about it and seeing if everybody knew what was going on. They were in class for the, you know, first part of that as it unfolded. And it was just the most somber day that you can remember. And my French teacher, I'll never forget it. She was like, no, we are going to be studying French. Whatever is happening on television will be there when you leave this room. So we didn't see any of the towers falling. And it was almost not, I couldn't even comprehend it then. I remember I went to chemistry next, and then they were like, no, the towers aren't there anymore. Yeah, they are. They got hit. But we missed out on that whole experience. So it was a day obviously no one will ever forget, but it was very sombering.
Wow. I'm talking with Jill Savage. We'll be on the Autzen sideline Saturday with Roxy and Anthony calling the action. You lived and work here and obviously know the pulse of those who follow this conference. The Ducks were picked as a slight favorite to win the North. I'm kind of curious, among your colleagues and the people you speak with heading into this season, what was the read? What was the buzz on this Oregon team, you know, now a second season with Mario Cristobal as head coach?
Yeah, I think I'll start with Washington, just as they were the one-point underdog, if you will, at the Media Day poll to win the North.
Right.
That Chris Peterson was believed to have, you know, he gets the benefit of the doubt, because even though they were going to replace nine starts on defense, we've seen them do this before. And unfortunately for Washington, they had a conference game in week two. That schedule was not conducive to getting new people up and running in playing a big-time conference game against one of your protégés in Justin Wilcox. So then you look at that and it said, okay, well, we thought that Washington, and they still might be that team. It just might take a couple of weeks, right? Like,
right.
I think that the schedule is the thing that we're going to point back to for the Husky team. Now, with Oregon, yes, you have Justin Herbert. Yes, you have good pieces back. But I think that what I looked at is, can they win close games, and can they win on the road? Those are still going to be the questions that I have for this Oregon team. Now, I will say, after watching that Nevada game in person, that defense looked good. And if there is a reason that I would be even more optimistic about Oregon, I think it's going to be on the defensive side of the football. Just the way that they had, you know, tackles for loss, they're in the backfield, they're aggressive, but they know their assignments, and I know, again, this is after 2 weeks of football, so take it for what you will, but it just looked like they were an impressive group, and you combine that with Justin Herbert and a group of wide receivers that should be getting healthier as the season goes on, that does make for a scary team.
And if you win every game by 71 points, you're going to have a very good season. You know, and as you mentioned, you were here last week, and, you know, Nevada kicked a field goal with 10.5 minutes to go in the first half. It was a one-point game. Then in what seemed like in the blink of an eye, it was like Custer's Army at Little Bighorn. It was just wipeout city. You mentioned the defense. What did you make of that display of firepower by the Oregon offense?
So the thing that I knew to watch for in that game, Marcus Arroyo said, I need to see what we have out of this group of wide receivers. Now, you can throw the tight ends in there as well, because they played a big part early in that game. But they were taking shots down the field in the first half. I think that I wrote down that they had seven that was shots downfield that were 20 or more yards in the first half. And I know that is something that the Oregon fan base has been looking for.
Yep.
And they came out, and they were successful in doing that. Now, Nevada's secondary wasn't highly touted, and they gave up a lot through the air in their first game against Purdue. So how is that going to work as you continue on? Well, Oregon's wide receiver group is still going to get better as well. So it's kind of, you know, a little of this, a little of that. You have the magic potion, potentially, for Justin Herbert to get that completed down the field, as all of the Oregon fans have been yelling for about 2 years now.
Let's talk about some of the other stuff you've witnessed in conference. Week one, you were on the sidelines for Arizona State, Kent State. Then you made it to Berkeley that Saturday. So the Sun Devils, I would say most had ASU mid-level expectations for this season. You got to see the freshman quarterback in person. Jill, what's your early evaluation of Jaden Davis?
Yeah, so Jaden Daniels.
What did I say, Davis? Sorry, thank you.
He's only been around for 2 weeks, so I'll let it play. But the thing that we knew, so Jaden Daniels was named the starter 2 weeks before that first game. The thing that people did not know is that Donovan West, a true freshman center, was going to have to start the game because the guy in front of him went out with a foot injury. So Donovan West knew for 4 days that as a true freshman, he he was going to be the starting center. So they've had some shuffling on the offensive line, and I think that's where you're going to see the problems with the offense as it kind of continues. Until that group gels, that's where it's going to be. That being said, that's not really a great place for a true freshman starting quarterback to work from. But when I look at Jaden Daniels and just the intangibles about him, he's so mature. Like, I can't stress it enough. This kid doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He is going to he's going to be level-headed and keep you in games and just keep moving on to the next play, which is going to be the most important thing for this Arizona State offense. If their drives sputter and they can't get something going, it's not going to affect him the way that it will some other quarterbacks that you see, especially when they're young in their career. I would compare what the maturity of Jaden Daniels is everything that JT Daniels didn't have last year at USC in that roller coaster that team would be on. And, of course, they have other problems as well. But I think that it's almost like a night and day reflection, for that comparison with the two Daniels.
Talking with Jill Savage, couple final thoughts of the Pac-12 Network. After Cal's win, I saw you spoke with their inside linebacker. I believe it's Coyne Dang.
Coyne Dang, yes.
A JUCO transfer who, he has to make up for the loss of Jordan Kinoshik, who only had about 150 tackles. That was a big-time Pac-12 debut. What were your impressions of he and this defense, which, you know, they're trying to have continued excellence from last year?
Yeah, he's about 6'6 as an inside linebacker. And Tim DeRuiter, Justin Wilcox in our meetings talking to them, they said that's so unusual to see a guy like him that is that tall at that position that can bend down, maneuver the way that he does. They said it doesn't hinder him, if you will, at that position because he can still get so low to the ground. It makes life easier when you have Evan Weaver standing there next to you because he's just going to get, how many more tackles for loss and all of that he got the National Defensive Award for this week in that game against UW. But, yeah, when you look at this defense overall, they have solid line play. Obviously, if you still have Evan Weaver, you add in Coyne Dang. He was a very highly touted JUCO transfer. And then the takers in the back end, as they are known, the Cal secondary, who had the second most interceptions last year. And they are all so competitive. And the way that they talk to you in meetings, and they're like, we are all on a mission to get the first interception, to get the first forced fumble. Our entire focus is making life miserable for you and taking the ball away as quickly and as viciously as we possibly can. And it's so impressive to see what Justin Wilcox has done with that group, looking at a team that played, no defense before he got there, and to have them be one of the conference's most elite defensive groups in that amount of time is the most impressive turnaround that I have seen in years in the Pac-12. And they absolutely deserve all the credit that they're getting. But on the other side of the ball, I think it's just as impressive. Like, they were talking about the confidence that they have on offense. And I think that you can go back, and as you watch the season unfold, know that they had a lot of changes with the coaches, right? Like, they're the same humans coaching different positions. So Bull Baldwin is now the quarterback's coach. Marquise Tuiasosopo was coaching them last year. And I think that you're going to see, with him being the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator, he has been known to make superstars, right? Like, Vernon Adams came from a Bo Baldwin system.
Right.
So you just see it now, and you say Chase Garber is a year two with him as the quarterback's coach. You saw that confidence. And could he lead a game-winning drive? Well, you just saw him do it at Husky Stadium. They have a run game now, so I'm really excited to see where this Cal team could go, because they are, they're not cocky, but they are the most confident group that I have seen in Berkeley in a long time.
And the last thing is, you were here during the glory era, Chip Kelly, Major Bowles, and now season two at UCLA. Yeah, it's not going well. The offense looks shaky, and here comes Oklahoma. Jill, what's the buzz among you and people you talk with in the conference about, you know, no way around it? This is ugly right now, and it's a rough situation.
It is, and they're still a young group. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
That I think that they have somewhere like around like 50 or 60 freshmen and sophomores that they're dealing with. The offensive line is still very young as well. And they did get Joshua Kelly back this week, which helped them out a little bit on offense, but still, when you're in your first game back after coming back from injury, it's not going to be 100%. So when I look at this group, though, I look back at the team that Jim Mora had, and they were a team that would get penalized all the time. They had the most amount of talent that he did the least amount with. There was an article out there that would go through and track how many 4 or 5 three-star kids that you have and what you did with that. And statistically, everybody that Jim Mora brought in was highly touted, but he couldn't do anything with them. So Chip Kelly had to take this group of kids and make them believe what he's saying, because I think that the buy-over, the buy-in of the mentality of the kids is a lot of a bigger rebuild, I think, than people understood going into year one. And I think that is still underway, that Chip doesn't have it exactly as he wanted it. It was a much easier situation. Let's look at this with Oregon. He had a program that was up and running. Mike Bellotti had a great system in place. There were kids that understood what they needed to do. Chip is still putting that in place down there in Westwood. But
nah.
I did look at, like, there were, when you looked at the defense, I don't know if you watched any of that game, but
I did.
The first half against San Diego State, they had numerous opportunities to get tackles fill off, and they couldn't execute. They couldn't wrap them up. And they would end up getting, you know, a first down out of it or, you know, an 8-yard gain. And it was like little moments like that are so deflating for a team, because I think that happened like 5 or 6 times in the first half when I was still able to watch the game. So there are moments where you're like, oh, they're going to do it. They're able to do it. They're right there. But the execution still isn't there. And I think that still comes from a young group. But it's going to be interesting because, I mean, the luster is definitely wearing off in Westwood. But how is it going to be perceived as they go along? Because UCLA's schedule doesn't get any easier.
Nope.
As you mentioned, Oklahoma this weekend, and the rest of their schedule, not an easy walk in the park. So yeah, Chip's honeymoon is definitely over in Westwood.
Yeah, rough sailing, as they say. Folks, she's Jill Savage. She'll be back in town with the ace Pac-12 team of Roxy Bernstein and Anthony Heron working the sidelines Saturday. You could follow her on Twitter. Use the handle at Jill_Savage. Jill, always my pleasure. You travel safe. Enjoy your time in town. Have a great broadcast. And I always appreciate your time and insight.
Of course. It's the best to be on with Steve Cannon. You know that.
Thanks, Jill. Let's talk to you soon.